To live in the greater Des Moines metro is to love the area and all the new and exciting things happening in central Iowa. But you want more opportunities to connect with the community you love. AARP hears you. That's why they're expanding their activities and programs to help you explore all that life has to offer here in greater Des Moines. Visit aarp.org/IA to get involved. If you don't think building better communities when you think AARP, then you don't know ARP. Discover all the real possibilities right here in your community.
Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Aurion, Human Resources and More for businesses and nonprofits. AURION.com. Remax Concepts, real estate professionals with offices in the Des Moines Metro, Nevada, and Cedar Rapids. RealEstateConcepts.net.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. This past week, I made a stop in to see Danny Homan, the president of Ask Me 61, to talk about news reports about recertification votes. The vendor who is working on this project is requiring, according to Homan, the union to jump through all kinds of hoops just to get a vote for recertification. The entire process seemed to us to be politically motivated. My first question to Danny Homan is, why do you think the Iowa legislature created these recertification, or some say, these recertification hurdles?
Well, I believe the reason the recertification vote ended up in our law is they believe, the Republicans believe, that if people today had an opportunity to vote to get rid of their union, they would avail themselves to that opportunity. A lot of the units that we represent in this state, and ASME represents, and probably a lot of other labor unions, date back to, they were certified back in the 1970s, late 70s. So none of those folks have ever, you know, we've turned over the entire group of people that were there when that vote was. So that was their rationale. If people paid attention to what they said during the debate on this bill, as I said, we want to give people the opportunity to vote as to whether or not they want a union again. So we're going to require them to vote 1 year prior to the expiration of their contract. Well, the fallacy with that is if the employer does 1 year contracts with us, we'll be holding recertification elections every year. So how does that fit with the narrative that people were told by Republicans last year when they passed this bill? It doesn't. This is nothing but a way to try and have people vote to get rid of their union after they gutted their union's ability to bargain a respectable contract by making everything virtually permissive and or excluded, and you basically have three mandatory subjects. That would be base wage, how you get paid, and the pay grade that's assigned to your job classification. That's it. Everything else is either permissive and or excluded.
And this has caused consternation all across Iowa. But at the same time, this now new recertification effort has been successful with you, with the teachers union, and a number of other unions have already had recertification. Is that correct?
Yeah, last October, I don't have the exact figures. I know what ours are. Since they passed this law, ASME has recertified 43 of our 44 bargaining units that have already had elections. And the teachers have recertified 131 of, I think, 139 of their bargaining units. Most of the labor unions in the state have had recertification elections, some with mixed success. And quite frankly, our success has been fantastic. And we believe that people still want to have a union. They still want to have a contract. And I think this is what's upsetting Republicans in this state, that their master plan to wipe out labor unions didn't work as they had envisioned it to work when they passed this law.
Are these rules and regulations that are now being put together through the Iowa legislature, are they a mirror of what happened in other states like Wisconsin?
Right now, they're really a mirror of what happened in Wisconsin. No other state has passed as terrible a law as Wisconsin. Wisconsin's Act 10, you know, that was passed. They've done not near the number of recertification elections that we've done here in Iowa. You know, Ohio's law, if it wouldn't have been a fall victim to the citizen's veto, would have been the same. So it's really the Iowa-Wisconsin law. When they were telling us what they were going to do, I was told that they were either going to nibble on the edges of Chapter 20 or it was going to be Wisconsin on steroids. I believe this is Wisconsin on steroids.
Let's talk a little bit about Chapter 20 for just a moment. Chapter 20 was enacted during the Ray administration, I believe.
It was passed in 1974 by a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and signed by a Republican governor.
Yeah. And that was a result of a, if I understand it correctly, a teacher's strike here in Iowa that was illegal at the time. And so all of that time, from 1974 up until now, things have been relatively, well, you've always had a battle, it would seem.
Not really. You know, the law was passed in 74. The first contracts were bargained in 77. In our history with the state of Iowa, we did one arbitration with Governor Ray. We did multiple arbitrations with Governor Branstad. And I had to go to arbitration last year for the last contract, even under a law that gave us very few rights because the state was not willing to put anything in the contract other than the base wage raise. And we had to get a negotiability dispute ruling from the Public Employment Relations Board. We got a preliminary ruling. We have yet to get the final ruling. And that's where they ruled that paydays and pay grades were also mandatory. The state wouldn't put pay grades or paydays into the contract. I still had to go to arbitration to get that language put in the contract. So, you know, very few contracts went to arbitration. Based on the number of contracts that this unions in this state bargained prior to this law, less than probably 1% of them went to arbitration. Most of them were settled voluntarily, and most of them were, there was give and take on both sides of the table. Everybody said it was all in the union's favor. That's not true.
Before we get into the issue at hand right now, I want to give you an opportunity. So many individuals are against unions for one reason or another, or they seem to be against unions. What reason do unions exist for, Danny Homan? What's the purpose of a union at its very base record?
In my opinion, the purpose of having a union is to give the employees a voice in the terms and conditions of their employment. It's not to dominate it. Unions don't want to break an employer. That doesn't work. You know, if we price ourselves out of the business by high wages, high benefits, etc., then the employer is just going to shut down. Okay, but it's to give people a voice. Right now, public employees in this state do not have a voice in the terms and conditions of their employment. They don't get to talk about vacations. They don't get to talk about how they schedule time off. So in some places in state government, they put everybody's name in a hat and draw a name out. So I'm the 35-year employee, and my name goes in a hat with a one-month employee. And if the one-month employee's name is pulled out of that hat, they get the vacation. I don't. So it is... Seniority, layoff. They can go and lay off someone like myself that's got a lot of gray hair, that's got 35 years seniority, that's at the top of my pay grade, getting the top vacation. They can lay me off and keep a six-month employee or less than a six-month employee now. They don't even have to, I don't believe, have to lay off the probationary employee. So we're seeing this. We're seeing long-term employees being laid off or jobs eliminated And they're keeping less senior employees there who eventually end up doing the same job the more senior person was doing.
What's interesting, here in Iowa, we continue to add jobs at a feverish rate. But in the area of public employees and government, we continue to see drops in the numbers.
Correct.
Is that on purpose?
Yeah, I believe so. That started under Terry Branstad, and I believe it's continued under this acting governor. They're trying to downsize public employment in state service. I think we're over 2,000 less public employees. Now, I know everybody out there or some people out there saying, well, that's good. No, it's not good when we have 17 inches of snow in northwest Iowa and we have to clear the interstates and the state highways up there. It's not good when you have a correctional officer working at the Iowa State Penitentiary in a cell house by himself because the other jobs have been eliminated or not filled because DOC has gotten multiple deappropriation cuts. So it's not good.
And would it also be similar? These are all working families, I would suspect, that are counting on whatever these jobs are to raise a family, to go to school, buy groceries. So it does have an economic impact on communities.
Absolutely. Any time you see we've experienced it twice. When we shut down the Mental Health Institute in Mount Pleasant and we shut down the Mental Health Institute in Corinda, those communities suffered because those were good jobs. People made a decent wage. And they shopped in their community. The majority of them were there. Those folks have gone somewhere else. And that community has lost those people. The folks that Ask Me represents, I'm not representing the football coaches at Iowa or Iowa State or UNI or the basketball coaches. We're representing the custodians. We're representing the folks that worked in the drafting office. We're representing DOT equipment operators that plow snow. We're representing correctional officers. In the county, we represent the same type of people. These are average middle-class folks that make a decent wage. They're not getting rich. They're not living in a $400,000, $500,000 home. They're just living in they're living the life that I lived when I grew up in Sioux City in the 70s, the 60s and 70s. My dad was a union guy, a Teamster, and then he went to work for operating engineers. And we didn't have everything we want. We had everything we needed. And, you know, I had health insurance and dental insurance and, you know, I broke my arm a couple times and had a couple teeth knocked out. And we were able to get that stuff taken care of because we had a union job.
And today that's at risk.
That's at risk.
All right. Now, there's a current flap that's going on about your recertification vote that was scheduled for August, and now it's potentially been moved back some months. Let's give the Cliff's Notes on that issue. This sounds to me as though you have to register to vote to register a vote.
Right.
So you have to vote twice to vote.
Have to register in order to cast your vote for recertification.
So now, this is not a registration for voting like you do for Congress or for governor.
No.
This is, you must register to vote in the union recertification. But wouldn't those companies wherever, and the counties and the municipalities and the state, wouldn't they already know who's
correct
a member?
And they have to submit those lists of the eligible voters not only to the union, but to the vendor that conducts the election. So all this was a hurdle. What they were trying to do is say 1 week before the voting starts and during the first week of the voting, I had to call in or email in to the vendor, and they had to approve me in order to vote. Then they give me a secret 6-digit code that I have to put in when I vote. There were so many unknowns about this process. This process was laid out to us a month and a half or so ago, and I really don't know where it's at. I have an email that says they're not going to do this. I haven't seen any new rules that have been drafted that says they're not going to do this. But, you know, we believe it's kind of like voter suppression. The employer certifies the list to the vendor. Well, anybody on that list can vote. We went through recertifications last October without this
added registration.
Added registration, and 80% of people voted. I believe the reason they were doing this was to drive down the number of people that vote. What folks have to realize is everybody that doesn't vote, they automatically are counted as a no vote. So if you have a bargaining unit of 200 people and 95 folks vote no and 50 folks vote, excuse me, 95 people vote yes for recertification, 50 people vote no against recertification, the no's win because the 55 folks that chose not to vote for whatever reason, maybe they don't care, maybe they forgot, whatever. Their votes are automatically counted as a no vote. So we end up losing that election, 95 to 105.
Even though people don't vote. One of the things, you know, it's hard enough to get people to vote for municipal elections, school board elections, state elections, those types of things. I would suspect AFSCME and the other unions are spending lots of money, lots of time and lots of effort talking to individuals out there about the vote. How much has this encumbered the unions?
Well, last year we had to talk to roughly 1,700 people. For this upcoming election, which right now I believe is going to be in October, haven't really been officially told, we're going to have over 21,000 people to talk to. So we're using a lot of different tools to try and get to people to find out where they're going to be at. But it really involves of the staff and the local leadership and people within our locals talking one-on-one with their coworkers, explaining to them why it is a good deal to vote. Because if they don't vote, 10 days after that no vote, their contract is null and void, which is not in the law. That's another egregious rule that the PERB board passed, that they're applying the decertification rule to the recertification
of that contract.
Yes. So under the old law or under the law right now, if a unit votes to decertify the union, 10 days after that vote, that contract's null and void. When they put in the recertification rules, even though we have a valid contract that goes to June 30th, they have put in rules that says, no, 10 days after the recertification vote, if you fail, your contract is null and void. That's nowhere in the law. That is a rule that PERB made up and passed, which I believe is completely contrary to any other type of law. If I make a contract with Mike and I want to get out of that contract, I have to still fulfill that contract to the end date of that contract. So if we bargain a contract with the state of Iowa that says it expires June 30th of 2019, and we have a recertification vote in October, and if one of those bargaining units don't recertify, that contract will be void 10 days after that vote. To me, that also is just unconscionable. But that's kind of, I believe, how they're trying to put more and more hurdles in front of people to have an opportunity to belong to a labor union.
Danny Homan, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for sitting down with us and talking about
Mike,
this.
Mike, thank you for at least coming and hearing our side of the story and trying to get this out to folks so that they can understand how we're being attacked, and I believe unfairly.
Danny Homan on the Business News Hour. A check of the markets, that's coming up next here on Insight on Business, the NewsHour. Thanks for clicking through.